Hey everyone, today's show has some content that may not be appropriate for children 13 and under. Please use discretion when listening with small ears. Thank you.
What do you think you're doing? You're listening to Crime Quest, a podcast covering the cold, the solved, and the theories. Join us.
Hello.
Hey.
This is Kara.
This is Amanda.
And we are the hosts of Crime Quest. This is episode 8. Thank you for joining us today. How's things been going with you, Amanda?
Good. Busy. Just trying to pack up to move, so.
It's exciting.
Get a new studio for us to record in. Yay!
Just so everybody knows, we record in a local library in one of the study rooms, so it's like a mini recording studio. We love it. And. Yeah. But it would be nice to be in a more relaxed environment because the library is they have hours and they're not open on Sundays and all that stuff. So
apparently, kids study a lot more than we thought because they're usually there are a lot of busy times for these rooms. So
it's so true.
So we won't have to worry about fighting high school kids for a study room.
Yeah.
Soon, which is great. I'm excited about that. So hopefully, that'll keep us on a better schedule too.
Yes, absolutely.
So, yeah.
Well, we've gotten our episodes pretty consistent, so this is our 8th episode. We've been pretty consistent with recording once a month, which I think is pretty awesome considering that we both have a lot going on in other areas of our life. So, all right, I'm just going to jump right in.
Yeah.
So today's episode, Amanda and I are doing what we've been doing previously, where I discuss one kind of murder or crime that occurred, and Amanda discusses another. So mine is the case of the Wallace Thrasher plane crash. Dun, dun, dun.
That's actually a
cue
really cool name.
The creepy music.
That's like a 1930s name to me. It sounds like you should be
he was born in the 40s. Board. Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay.
All right, so I'm going to give you some background on this. All right, so back in 1984, on October 17th, in the wilderness of Virginia, which is Carroll County / Fancy Gap Mountain, you can Google it, folks, a charred body was found in a plane crash wreckage in the cockpit. The charred body was found in the cockpit, and the back of the plane was about 570 pounds of high-grade marijuana worth over about $1 million. Now, keep in mind, this was 1984, so that much marijuana would be worth a lot more today, maybe, probably.
It would be, yeah.
Back then, $1 million was a lot of money. It still is today.
Yeah.
But that was over 30 years ago. So, the plane crashes into the side of a mountain in Carroll County, Virginia. The plane was a Beechcraft Bonanza, belonged to 44-year-old Wallace Thrasher of Bland County, Virginia. However, the police determined that the body found with the plane was 24-year-old Mark Moreland Bailey of Maine and not Wallace Thrasher. Oh my gosh. Officially formed on March 30th, 1861, this is just some background on Bland County, because I knew nothing of Bland County, so I wanted to see what Bland County was all about. So it was formed in March 30th, 1861, and it's located a bit southwest of Roanoke, Virginia, off of Interstate 77. It's essentially on the border of West Virginia and Virginia.
Is it near Bluefield? Because I know kind that's like
of
a bigger city.
It is. Well, it's kind of near there.
Okay.
It's in the section of Virginia that's considered Appalachia.
Okay.
And according to the 2010 census, Bland County is the 6th least populated county and is one of the only counties in the U.S. that doesn't contain incorporated municipalities.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So I'm guessing that the 6th least populated county means that there's a county that has
five people,
and then there's a county, you know, it's the 6th from that county.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
So it has more people than the first least amount.
Wow.
So just something to note there. So basically in the middle of nowhere where nobody lives, if you want some background. I bet it's beautiful, though.
Yeah. I mean, it's a mountain. So
it is. It's it, the county is part, like I said, of the Appalachian region of the state.
Gorgeous.
So let me give you some background on Wallace Thrasher. The name is itself is pretty amazing. But in high school, Thrasher went by the nickname of Squirrel because of his ability to always get out of trouble and for his scampering running style as a football player. He was a member of the Key Club and Latin Club. I don't know why that's relevant. It was in a few articles that I found. I guess that speaks to his integrity or something. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. I don't think we had murderers in Key Club when I was in it.
But. He may have just joined those clubs because there were hot girls in those clubs. Oh. Which he was very handsome. If you look at his photos online, he was pretty cute. He later became, so after high school, he became a clothing salesman and was also a former Mr. Virginia contestant.
Oh my gosh.
Which I found to be very funny.
This gets better and better.
It does. It really does. I mean, let me just say that I found, so that when I first, I read this article on just someone's, it looked like a crime website.
Yeah.
But the rabbit hole that I've been digging has been really interesting because there's several articles about this guy, and each one just seems to go into more and more detail about how amazing. And this story is a movie, and I haven't determined yet if a movie actually. No, I'm saying like this story should be a movie.
Okay.
But it should be a movie, and it's pretty fascinating. So I'm just going to continue on.
Okay.
So in the 1970s, somehow Thrasher built a full-fledged drug-running operation that flew tons of marijuana and cocaine into the western region of Virginia. The distributors would then smuggle the drugs north to Chicago, Detroit, and other big cities. Thrasher often piloted the planes himself, according to W.J. Evans of the state police. And I wanted to find out, well, where in the heck would somebody fly a plane out of Roanoke, like around that area of Virginia? It's all mountains. But apparently there is a Piedmont General Aviation Division located in Roanoke.
Oh,
and that's where he would fly the planes into and out of.
Oh, okay. And there is a small airport out there. Is that the same? Is that?
There is. I'm not sure where this place is, but there is some. There obviously was somewhere for him to fly the planes in and out of.
Okay.
Obviously, the business was doing very well. Thrasher lived in Bland County on a 10-acre luxurious estate with his wife, Olga. She was 28 at the time of the crash. She is described to be a striking, dark-haired woman. They had two children. Wasn't able to find much of anything on that. But Olga was from Portugal, she was from Portuguese descent, rather.
Okay.
And she came from very poor circumstances, one article cites. And Olga was given up for adoption and met Thrasher when she was processing paperwork in a Florida airport. So she must have been, you know, this must have been like one of her first jobs or something.
Okay.
And Thrasher probably hit on her at the airport, is what I'm guessing. He was a ladies' man, from what I've learned.
Yeah, sounds like he would be.
He wasn't afraid to let everyone at the airport, the one that he was flying the planes in and out of, know what he was doing and managed to always stay two steps ahead of the law. So essentially, people at the airport knew that he was running drugs. It was not a secret to them, but he's always managed to like evade police in that region. I was reading on some things about how he did spend 2 years in prison in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
That was before the plane crash, obviously. And so it's not that he never got in trouble. It's just that he would get in trouble and then they would let him go. So he was never like permanently locked up anywhere.
Okay.
So once he ended up meeting Olga right after he got out of jail in Mexico. Mm-hmm. So once the police realized that the plane that they found on October 17th belonged to Wallace Thrasher, an article appeared in the paper that Wallace Thrasher had been killed in Jamaica in a plane crash.
Okay.
So a lot of confusion. The widow, Olga, did not make herself available for questioning on the matter, but did produce a death certificate, which was later determined to be fraudulent.
Okay.
Apparently, the police couldn't determine... They couldn't find evidence of the plane crash in Jamaica. They also couldn't find the doctor that signed the death certificate.
Okay.
So, in a telephone interview with Olga... she said that Thrasher called her on the last Saturday in October and said he would do whatever it took to get back to her by Wednesday. So I'm guessing the way this reads was that Olga knew that he didn't actually die in the Carroll County plane crash.
Okay.
And that he contacted her later, like later that month.
Okay.
And she told no one of it because they're living in luxury, mm-hmm. on drug money. So, she's not going to be forthcoming with any information.
Yeah.
So, when she never heard from him, she ran a paid death notice in the Roanoke newspaper and actually held a funeral for him in Pulaski County, Virginia,
okay.
which is very strange. Like,
yeah.
Like, okay, so you know that your husband didn't die in the Carroll County plane crash. He
mm-hmm.
calls you at the end of the month to tell you, no matter what, I'm going to get to you. I'll be home by Wednesday.
Okay.
It's a Saturday when he calls. She says, well, he never called, so I'm just going to have a funeral. That makes zero sense.
That's what I do when my husband doesn't show up.
Right, like,
I
okay, I give up? No, I'm sorry.
No, not at all.
Also, like I said before, there was no evidence found to confirm the Jamaican plane crash, like witnesses, etc., the doctor that signed the death certificate.
Huh.
So basically everyone thinks that that was made up.
Okay.
The police filed charges against Thrasher, and the widow agreed to spill the beans. The crash in Virginia had a co-pilot who apparently crawled to it. This is what Olga says.
Okay.
So the crash in Virginia in Carroll County had a co-pilot who apparently crawled to a payphone, called Thrasher to come pick him up.
Oh.
This is, okay, let me just say this. You were in a plane crash.
Yeah.
No one, on a mountaintop, no one is crawling from a mountaintop to a payphone.
No. You crash into a mountaintop, you're dead.
You're dead. Even if you're injured, like, you're not crawling on the ground down the mountain. Like, this makes zero sense. Anyway.
Wait, when did this happen to?
1984.
Do we have a month?
October.
So it was cold up there. I mean, there's a good chance that there was snow, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in that part of the state. So, yeah, he's not going anywhere.
Yeah, and it says, so anyway, so this is, again, this is coming from Olga. He crawls down the mountain to call Thrasher and tell him that something has happened to the plane and he needs to be picked up.
Right.
Now, granted, there was someone else in the plane with him that I mentioned earlier that actually was killed. So the notion is that there were actually two people in that plane. One lived and one did not.
Okay.
The person that lived allegedly crawled down the mountain after being in a fatal plane crash to another person, and called Wallace Thrasher to come get him, and Thrasher apparently did so all before the police were aware.
Hmm. Because a plane crashing into a mountain doesn't set up warning signs in the neighboring homes.
Right. The injured pilot, later determined to be Nelson King, also of Maine, was taken to an out-of-state hospital. Bland County sits on the border of West Virginia, but apparently Wallace Thrasher took him all the way to Florida and explained his injuries were from a motorcycle accident. So the only thing I can think is Wallace Thrasher picked up his friend, took him immediately to his airport where he has a plane, and flew him to Florida. Because you don't just drive someone that's bleeding all over the place to...
Yeah, it's a 16-hour drive. He wouldn't have survived that.
No.
I can't imagine.
Makes zero sense. However, one article states that Mr. Nelson went to a nearby residence and hosed himself off. When the occupant wouldn't let him use her phone, he walked to a phone booth in the parking lot of a motel to call Thrasher.
Okay.
So there's some conflicting information here.
Yeah.
Olga is saying, well, he just crawled out of the mountain and made a phone call. Which nobody does that. And then Nelson King, in an article that I read that seems a little more credible, is that he wasn't injured as badly as one might think.
Okay.
And he was cut up pretty bad, but he was actually able to walk to someone's residence, the occupant of the residence would not let him use her phone, but okay. She was able to give him, it said that she gave him like a glass of water and let him hose himself off. Mm-hmm. And when she said, no, 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 you cannot come in my house, he walked to a phone booth in the parking lot of a nearby motel to then call Thrasher.
Okay.
Thrasher then took $250,000 in cash and headed to Belize in Central America. Okay. It is unclear whether he intended to start a new drug run or a new life. Olga believed that the co-pilot in the Virginia crash may have caused Thrasher's death and stolen the $250,000. So keep in mind, Olga never saw her husband again.
Right.
So she's speculating, I think, that Nelson King
okay.
is a liar and okay. took the money and ran.
Okay.
Like in the Steve Miller Band song. So a week later, the wife received a call from one of Thrasher's associates explaining that he was killed in the plane crash on takeoff in Jamaica. So that's where the police heard of the plane crash.
Okay.
Because Olga is the one that ended up reporting it to the Roanoke newspaper and saying, I'm going to put out a death notice that my husband was killed in Jamaica.
Okay.
So it could be that Olga didn't, like, orchestrate this whole thing. It was more that Thrasher's associates were the ones that said, let's just fake his death.
Okay. Yeah.
And make it look like he died because we really took all of his money.
Huh.
So there's this component of either Thrasher was like, I'm going to get in trouble. I need to leave my entire life right. behind and start new somewhere. Or his associates were like, this guy's making all this money. Let's steal right. his money and make it look like Wallace Thrasher fakes his own death.
Okay.
When he actually is dead because we killed him
right.
and took all of his money. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'm trying to think which one's more plausible though.
Well, okay. So first of all, Thrasher had two kids.
Yeah.
He lived on a very beautiful piece of property in Bland County.
Okay.
Apparently it was like a log home with several cottages, like log cottages on the property. It was 10 acres of land. It had, you know, she drove like a beautiful car mm-hmm. and I mean, he had a lot going on for himself.
Okay.
He could have very easily maybe even tried to go back to his own life.
Right.
But I guess there's also the threat of, I'm never going to see my kids again.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's going to be taken from me.
Right.
I might as well fake my own death.
And disappear, yeah.
So, it's so interesting. It's like, what really happened?
Yeah.
Anyway, according to Agent Donald Lincoln of the DEA, the fire from the crash, the alleged crash in Jamaica,
mm-hmm.
Was so intense, it burned down to the outline of a plane on the ground.
Oh my gosh.
There would be very little for them to send back and no reason for her to come down.
Oh wow.
So this is what the person that called Olga told her. They said, you know, it's so, the crash is really bad and there's mm-hmm. nothing really for us to send back to you, so you don't need to come down here and investigate or bury your husband or anything.
Okay.
So, red flag, I would be like, no, I'm not listening to you, I'm going to come to Jamaica anyways. Which, again, lends itself to the fact that Olga is probably making some of this up or is, like, in on it, because what logical person... That your husband, you find out your husband died in a plane crash,
right.
and you're just like, okay, fine, I'm not going to come to that country and check it out myself.
Yeah, we'll just have a memorial service.
He's a millionaire, and lots of people have things to gain from his death.
Right.
So, according to Olga, she bought a fake death certificate out of fear that her things would be confiscated if authorities found out that the money used to fund her lavish lifestyle was earned with drug sales. That fear was later realized, and their estate was seized by federal authorities.
Okay.
So you try to avoid something, it just happens anyway. The property located in Little Creek Valley was sold for $357,000 to a resident of nearby Whitville, Virginia.
Okay.
And I put a note here that it must have been sold back in the 80s or 90s, because that's a steal.
Yeah.
For a 10-acre property mm-hmm. with a log home and cottages.
Yeah. Even out there,
even out there,
that's a good price.
Yeah. The estate had a large, like I said, a large log home with several guest cabins. Interestingly, in 1986, 2 years later, one of Thrasher's former associates brought his wife something that was, quote, recovered in the crash. Wallace's red wedding ring. The ring was in perfect condition with the engraving intact. Okay. Yet it was found in a plane crash where the plane crash was so hot that it burned every ounce of the plane away.
Yeah.
Yet left a piece of gold jewelry.
Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense once again.
What's the, like, I would be interested to see, like, what's the temperature of the plane that burned, and then what gold melts at.
Yeah.
To see if there's any way that that could have withstood the...
Well, a plane... Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to speculate. I don't know. But the way that these articles read is that, I guess, the DEA agents know that that's not possible.
Okay.
Agent Donald Lincoln was, extremely suspicious since the entire plane had been melted to nothing. How did a wedding band manage to squirrel its way out of being melted also? Agent Lincoln believes that Wallace Thrasher did not die in that plane crash.
Yeah, that would make sense to me. I think the wedding ring kind of cinches that for me.
You think he didn't die either?
I don't think they were going to find a wedding ring. Plus, I mean, you think about it, bodies have to burn for a long, long time to disintegrate in that heat. I mean, if you look at cases like the Sodder children of West Virginia, if you've heard of them, they even determine that, like, that fire, and this is a great case, and I want to cover it sometime, but it was about five children who went missing, and they said that they died in a fire, but they had even said that the fire didn't burn long enough and hot enough for there not to be some sort of, like, DNA evidence of those kids left, or even just, like, bone fragments.
Yeah.
And again, the Romanovs, too, there's so much that you have to do to actually make a body just disappear like that.
That's true.
So I can't imagine that his wedding rings stayed intact, but the body burned.
I can't either.
With no, like, residue or anything.
Yeah.
Or, like, a bone sticking out or anything like that, no.
I love this story because it makes me think that he's still alive. So let me just read you what's going on now with the case. So this was about 2 years ago. On August 4th, 2015, there was an article written in the Roanoke Times that reports that all charges to Wallace Thrasher have been dropped.
Okay.
The U.S. District Court Judge Glenn Conrad signed the dismissal order to the case, which was originally opened on February 28th, 1985. According to court papers filed in Florida years ago, Wallace died in yet another plane crash in Belize on November 4th, 1985. So, we've got three plane crashes.
Yeah.
The one in Carroll County, the alleged plane crash in Jamaica, which no evidence was ever found happened, and then we have one on November 4th, 1985. What I'm thinking is that the one in Belize and Jamaica might have been the same... one.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there was just some...
Miscommunication, maybe.
Miscommunication, or there was, let's just say it's in Jamaica, but it was really in Belize to throw people off.
Okay.
Authorities at the time believed he survived the crash and were ready to pounce when he resurfaced. The disappearance of Thrasher, however, helped lead investigators to one of the nation's most successful drug convictions, the 1986 arrest of Gerardo Caballero, son-in-law of Robert Suarez, Bolivia's one-time king of cocaine. Before the crash in Belize, a plane owned by Thrasher crashed in Carroll County, which we've talked about, leaving one man dead, and that man, to give honor to him, the man's name was 24, he was 24-year-old Mark Moreland Bailey of Maine. So Mark Moreland and Nelson King were both from Maine. That's why earlier I was saying Nelson King was also from Maine.
Oh my gosh.
I digress. So anyway, the plane crash in Carroll County, leaving leaving the one man dead and scattering 570 pounds of marijuana over Fancy Gap Mountain.
Okay.
Federal law enforcement agencies were never able to locate Thrasher and say he is still a fugitive. This was in the article from 2 years ago.
Really?
So they have never found this man.
That's crazy.
Or his body.
30 years, you'd think there would be, like, at least some.
Yeah. However, the available evidence suggests that he is deceased, meaning that they have, like, some... I guess the plane crash in Belize might have been a little more legitimate looking than the one in Jamaica, yet authorities still think that that's not real.
Okay.
Even if he was alive, a conviction would be difficult because witnesses would be unavailable and too much time has passed.
Yeah.
So, according to G. Wayne Pike, who was the former sheriff of nearby Wythe County, who he later became a U.S. Marshal, said that he believed Thrasher is still alive. And as of today, the squirrel would be 76 years old.
You know, at this point, it's not like he did anything that was... He didn't go on, like, a murder spree or anything like that.
Yeah.
I'd say if he's still alive, let the guy live in peace in Belize or wherever he is.
Yeah.
Or South America. He's not, like, a Nazi war criminal.
Yeah, I mean, he was just running marijuana, which is about to be legal in every state now. So it's, like, really...
We hope.
Well, yeah, I mean...
just for...
It's...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting that... and I don't know, I haven't seen anything about him running any other types of drugs.
Okay.
As far as I know, it was just marijuana, but it doesn't mean that he wasn't involved with people that were doing cocaine runs and things of that nature.
If it led the police to that guy, to that Gerardo guy, that kingpin from Bolivia, maybe he was running other stuff.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think it's kind of like those, you know, not putting people in jail for, like, low-level drug charges and things like that now. It's, yeah, it was a big amount of drugs, but let the guy live in peace at this point.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I wonder, I mean, that was what, like, you said 500 pounds was, were...
570 was pounds, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I wonder if it's still there. Like, I wonder, I bet the high school kids go up and check.
I mean...
That's a crazy story. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and, the article I found was, so there's a few articles online about it. I wasn't able to find anything on, like, what Olga is doing these days.
Okay. I wonder if she's changed her name.
She believes that her husband is dead.
Okay.
While, but that belief benefits her because...
Yeah.
And I'm guessing that he may have never contacted her later.
Okay. That's kind of, I mean, you would think, though, if he had the two kids, I can't imagine running away from everything and leaving kids behind like that either. So that, like, that wants to sway me the other way. Because who would leave their kids like that? Or maybe he found a way to have contact with them.
Yeah.
I mean, that just, that's a cool story. Who knew there was stuff going on like that in Western Virginia?
I know. Well, I mean, that part of the state is a good place to hide out.
Yeah.
As you know,
there's
nobody out there.
Yep. I've seen that driving out there.
I always wonder, too, like, what people do for work out there.
I think it's a lot of farming. It's a lot of, I don't know. Like, they have the small towns. So they have, like, all the little commerce things. And I think their population is smaller. But I think a lot of things have been
They probably have a doctor's office and a dentist and
I mean, I have a friend who lives out there who's but she works from home for a company. So she's she works on her computer every day. But I mean, she works for a big company too. So it's not like she has to go out and look for something. But I can't imagine. I would imagine it's a lot of farming, maybe like mechanic stuff.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, everybody has a vehicle. You have to have a mechanic, and that's so interesting.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to find out what happened to Olga.
Yeah,
and
know that.
He has two kids.
You know what? I'll look her up on Ancestry, because I've got my... I still have a...
Olga Thrasher.
Record, or I still have an account for that, so...
Nice.
I bet I can... If she's not alive, she might show up on there.
And they have pictures of her online.
Oh, wow, she's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Oh, she's...
She looks like a model.
She was beautiful. Yeah, she looks kind of like Angelina Jolie.
And this is Wallace.
Oh my god, he's gorgeous. You guys need to look for him. He
looks
like a 40s film star.
Yeah, Wallace. Those dark
hair.
Dark eyebrows.
And the hair.
Yeah.
The hair is amazing.
Olga Thrasher.
Okay, I can see why they were... I mean, they must have been like a little power couple or something.
Yeah, really interesting.
Oh, that's cool. That's so cool. Yeah, now I'm eager to find out what happened to her.
All right. Cool. So this is what I think. And yeah. I don't think he ever died in any of those plane crashes.
Right.
But I don't think he's still alive now.
Okay.
Yeah. The reason I don't is because he's managed to keep a low profile for mm-hmm. this long with all of this. I think it's based on what I know of how people can disappear.
Mm-hmm.
He would have had to, first of all, change his name, which right. I guess was a lot easier in the 80s.
Yeah, I don't
now,
think so. You can doctor
he
up.
Would have had to change his name, mm-hmm. never tell anybody who he was,
right.
and completely disappear. And they say when you're trying to disappear like that,
yeah.
you can't do it by yourself. Because somebody like has to either help you do it
mm-hmm.
or somebody like it. Let's say that you go change your name. You have to tell someone, this was my name.
Okay.
This is my new name.
Right. So there's got to be a trail somewhere. Maybe not written down, but there's a trail of like people or persons.
Yeah.
That have worked with him or dealt with him. That's interesting. But you know what? Like, there's a theory that the Alcatraz escape,
mm-hmm.
that the one man died, Frank Morris, I think. And this is where I think it was like 1956 or something, where they took a boat, they fashioned a boat out of
right.
like rubber and
yeah.
tried to escape. And I guess the theory's always been that they died, but there's some interesting theories now that the Frank Morris did die, but the two brothers actually escaped to South America. And they would have had to do the same thing, but apparently, I mean, and you can still, there's like evidence to actually kind of trace these guys. So whether the family believes they're alive because they've gotten cards and stuff, but I mean, I wonder how much easier it is once you get to South America. It's got to be a lot easier.
It has
than
to be.
Here. I
yeah.
mean, because if you can, thinking if that story's true, I mean, honestly, I know it's a conspiracy theory, but it's got some good stuff to back
yeah.
it up. I mean, if two brothers can go down there and change their names and live down there for, what, 45 years, 50 years without being discovered? I think Wallace Thrasher could do the same thing. I mean, it's got to be so much easier, or it had to have been so much easier back then.
Yeah.
Especially in South America, if they were going to, like, a less sophisticated place. Mm-hmm. To do it?
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
if you were going to disappear, I mean, Belize or South America is a good
yeah.
place to go. But
yeah.
I just find it hard to believe that somebody could stay hidden that long knowing that they have this beautiful wife waiting
yeah.
for them. It sounds like they had a wonderful time
yeah.
together and that he really loved her.
Yeah.
And that he leaves behind two children and
yeah.
never resurfaces. But I guess a lot was at stake for him.
Right.
And I'm interested to know, too, if he, like, let's say he is still alive,
mm-hmm.
and he heard that the charges were dropped. Like, I wonder if he's heard that, and now he's going to reach out.
That would be awesome. That's kind of like the Andy Kaufman effect.
What is that?
You know how Andy Kaufman said he was going to fake his death?
Yeah.
And then he died of cancer?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not kidding. We have waited, like, every year on, like, his anniversary, my husband and I have been waiting for him to show up.
Wow.
We think it's, like, the biggest practical joke ever. But, I mean, I think it could be the same with him. Not that it was a practical joke, but, you know,
yeah.
he's just been waiting for that perfect moment to come back. And this could be that time if the charges have been dropped and he's not actively on, like, the wanted list.
Yeah.
So... And yes, I do believe Andy Kaufman's dead. Please don't send us emails telling me I'm an idiot for that. It's
yeah.
always just that little hope.
So this article, just really quick before we transition
yeah.
to your
yeah.
story. So this article says that U.S. Marshals say that Olga was in on the act, and they
okay.
say she printed an obituary in the paper and produced a fake death report to get insurance money.
Okay.
Which... Like, every article on this, you see something different. And then
yeah.
she allegedly took over Thrasher's drug trade. Authorities say Olga went as far as hiring a hitman to kill one of Thrasher's drug associates, which eventually led to her arrest.
Okay.
In exchange for her freedom, she testified against several members of the drug operation.
Okay.
Authorities created this age-enhanced photo of Thrasher to show
oh.
what he may look like after being on the run for more than 20 years.
Oh, cool.
Because the case spans more than two decades, Thrasher's fate and the stories surrounding him have become local folklore. Everyone has a theory on whether he's alive or not. U.S. Marshals say the tall tales that Thrasher met his demise on a plane crash aren't likely. They say Thrasher is alive and is just very good at playing the fugitive game.
Oh, wow.
Authorities believe Thrasher may have taken flight to Belize or the Bahamas, where he's living the good life. U.S. Marshals say even in his old age, Thrasher hasn't quite quit his job as a drug runner. He'll live and die for the thrill of it. Thrasher's story is one without an ending until he's brought back to face justice. Hmm. There is an Unsolved Mysteries episode of this, oh, by the way. Let's see if this is...
The old Unsolved Mysteries?
The photo. This is not the photo. This just took me to Facebook.
Oh.
Don't like that. Y'all need to get your links right. Okay. Anyway, very interesting. I would love to know what Olga's doing these days. Yeah. The article I was just reading from was dated October 31st, 2015.
Okay.
And I'm going to put a link to
the that. Unsolved Mysteries, is that like, do we know what season that is?
Yeah, let me, get that for you.
Because they tend to do updates a lot, so maybe it there's is, something on Olga.
It's a recent season because it's the one with Dennis Farina. And says it's on Amazon Prime in season one.
Season one, okay. By the way, that's a fun series. If you haven't watched the old Unsolved Mysteries, go back and watch it. It's so much fun.
I love that show.
It used to freak me out when I was a kid,
me
though.
Me too, but oh I loved gosh. It anyway.
It's like, how many people can disappear and die? And I'm like 9 years old going, oh my god.
So interesting.
Yeah.
I'm going to see if there's a hike near there.
Oh see yeah, that can... would be awesome.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Let's see. Included with Prime. I just want to, now I'm like, okay.
We want to find this.
Anyways, so this is a really interesting case. I loved researching it, and I'm going to try to see if I can find some more information on what happened to Olga and the children, but we would love to hear from our listeners on this one, because I think that there's a lot of components. Right. There's also a lot more conspiracy with it in the sense of whether, you know, Olga took over the business, mm-hmm. whether his associates killed him, okay. And whether he actually did, like, purposely fake his own death.
Right.
I would love to hear from everyone, so...
I'd be curious as to what his kids are doing now.
Tweet us your theories.
Yeah,
I would love to know, yes or no, did Wallace Thrasher fake his own death? What are your thoughts?
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Cool.
Amanda.
All right.
Lead us into your story.
All right. Well, mine's not as fun as yours, unfortunately. And there's not a ton of information on it, but it's just one of those stories where you read it and you go, how did I not know about this when it was happening? So we've talked about like Richmond back in the mm-hmm. 80s and 90s. In the early 90s, we were basically a hellhole as far as murder goes. I think we made the top 10 list for top murders per capita in the early 90s, and then we decided that we wanted to be number one. So I think we made it to number two at one point. I think it was like Detroit and then us, which is awesome. So the early 90s, I'm looking at some articles on this. What I'm going to talk about is the Golden Years Killer. And I've kind of brought this up to a couple of people and asked them if they remember it. And nobody has heard of it. I guess it's had some coverage, but it's been very minimal. And it also, a lot of this was kind of close to the Southside Strangler stuff, or it was right after the Southside Strangler, and we covered that in our second episode, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it got overshadowed, because
Poor Richmond.
I know. We're not that bad now.
Guys, come and visit us.
Yes.
It is a beautiful city.
And we're not that high on the murder list anymore. It's so much fun here. There's a lot going on besides murder. The Golden Years Killers. There are four murders that have actually been attributed to one person, but starting in like 1990 and going to 1996, they think that anywhere from like 14 to 20 women were killed. And they were elderly women, and they were killed either in their home, some of them were killed in nursing homes, and then, you know, but the one thing that I'm kind of upset about with this, I haven't been able to find many names. I do have a couple of, like, one name of, or two names of the women that were murdered, but there's not a lot of information on the victims, and
interesting.
I hate that.
So what were the years again?
technically the murders actually, the person that was arrested for the murders, they were from like 93 to 96, but there were other murders before 93, starting in like 1990. And overall, they're saying 14 to 20 murders. But the person that they pinned them on was only given like four of them, or was only charged for four of them. So there's actually some other fun stuff in this about a cover-up, and like it's all kinds of conspiracy stuff.
Yeah, so walk me through.
Okay, so the murders began obviously in the 90s, and it was breaking into elderly women's homes and murdering, and they would be found murdered. A lot of, I read some of it was strangulation. Some of them were sexually assaulted, some of them weren't. But what happened, they actually attributed this, in 1996, there was a man arrested. His name was Leslie Leon Burkhart. He was arrested actually for murdering a homeless man with his own shirt behind a grocery store. So the man that was murdered was 47-year-old William R. Merrill, and the medical examiner had actually ruled that was alcohol poisoning, but according to the cop that was on the case, it actually was a murder, or it was Leon's murder. I know I'm kind of jumping around, and it's weird.
I do remember this because I looked it up, and I think part of the reason I stopped looking up was because it was confusing to
me. Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Okay, so I do remember reading about this, and
right.
Okay, what's disturbing is, first of all, I don't think Leslie Leon Burkhart had anything to do with.
No.
Right?
I don't think so.
I'm probably jumping ahead, but I think that's the conclusion
that's okay.
I got to when I, okay. Keep
going.
Yeah,
that's okay.
Okay, so Leslie Leon Burkhart gets arrested for murdering a homeless man behind a grocery store with his T-shirt or something.
Right. And he actually, in 1996, he pled guilty to 7 murders over 6 months. And that was a killing spree of older women in the West End. So many of them were beaten. Some were found in their bathtubs. They had cleaning fluids poured on top of them. That he used towels for strangulation. So they were really horrible murders too. And I guess it says the West End, but I'm thinking it was still like, the West End you think more suburban now, mm-hmm. but I think it was like more of these little city streets, because the one that, I've looked at was actually on like a little city street, or the one that we're going to talk about.
Well, the West End used to be west of, like, Hamilton.
Yeah.
That was considered the West End.
Yeah.
Or west of, like, Thompson
and
Street.
And there's, like, little city streets in that area.
Yeah.
So I think that's where they're talking about.
Whereas now we think of the West End as, like, basically...
suburban.
Staples Mill.
Yeah.
And west of... everything west of Staples
Mill.
Yeah,
more sprawled than... Yeah. Rather than compact, like a city would be. He was actually, Burkhart was actually a homeless schizophrenic, and I guess he'd been off his meds. In addition to the women that he killed, he did kill 3 homeless men and then beat a 4th. Luckily he did not kill him, but, so the thing is, I do think he's responsible for some of the murders. But there's
some
one that
the
we're going to talk about.
Okay, so.
Yeah, some of the murders of the women.
Oh.
It sounds like there was, I think the thing that like tipped them off was there was a woman named Rachel, I can't find her last name, I'm sorry. I want to say Hemlin, let me find her last name real
okay.
quick.
Okay, so let me back up for a second.
Go ahead.
So we're in the early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
People are being murdered that are elderly.
Right.
In the West End.
Right.
There is a, a homeless man that is schizophrenic off mm-hmm. of his medication mm-hmm. who has confirmed to kill other homeless men in the area.
Right.
My question is, why the jump from homeless men to elderly women? And if he's homeless, mm-hmm. how is he, like, is he just walking, like, nobody sees him walking around in these neighborhoods where these women live? Like,
well, it sounds like they were all done at night, too, though. So, I mean.
Right.
And, you know, I don't, the 90s, I'm not sure what the homeless population was like, but I don't think these were, like, the best neighborhoods either.
Okay.
Most of them. So it might just have been a common sight for, you know, okay. a homeless man or two to walk down the street every few hours.
Okay.
The woman looking at, that he murdered in the nursing home was Rachel Henshaw. She's 81 years old. And she was murdered at an old nursing home. It's actually closed now, but it was called Kensington Gardens. And this is actually the murder that the sergeant assigned to the case was ordered to cover up. So, there's so much conflicting information
okay,
here.
So there was a sergeant. So there was a sergeant that was assigned to Rachel Henshaw's
right.
murder.
He was assigned to it, but it wasn't noted as a murder.
So he was assigned to cover up. What is he covering up?
Her death.
He's covering up the death of Rachel Henshaw.
Not her death. He was covering up the cause. So they ruled the cause it natural causes. Even though the nurse that discovered the body also said she saw a man, and she later identified him as Burkhart, leaving the room. So, you know, it sounds like this was a cover-up for them, and then the cops kind of confirming that, yeah, he was told to cover it up. Because our crime rates were so bad back in Richmond, apparently they did not want to add to that number with another murder. Which, you know, makes sense. It's not right. But it totally makes sense. And if it's a murder in a nursing home with an 81-year-old woman, and there's no visible, it sounds like he just kind of calmly strangled her.
So he just walks into this nursing
yeah.
home and does this.
I guess they weren't as strict on security back
well,
then.
Well, too, if it was in the middle of the night,
yeah,
maybe no one was at the desk. And
yeah.
if he's homeless, he might. If you're homeless, you got a lot of time on your hands
exactly.
to do some research on
exactly.
things you want to do. So
exactly,
it's not out of the ordinary, I guess, in the sense that it's not. It's definitely possible, and
right.
I can see the angle the police were taking where they didn't want to add to the murder.
Yeah, which, you know, I mean, I guess that makes sense. We had such a bad rap anyways. And this was, I think this would have been considered the city at the time. It wasn't like the county,
yeah.
the surrounding counties. So it's going to go into the city's murder rate. I don't think he was actually charged for that one. That one is what came out a few years later from the cop that he had killed her, but they were told to cover it up.
Okay, so the sergeant was, a few years later, came out and said, I'm sorry, I was told to cover this up.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And he also said that Burkhart was admitted to another killing that he was never charged with, and it was a homeless man behind a grocery store. And apparently, Burkhart's, his reasoning for all of this was because they were suffering. He killed older women because it reminded him of his stepmother. And then he said he killed homeless men because they reminded him of himself. And it sounds like he wanted to end their suffering. And, you know, if he was off his meds and schizophrenic, that kind of reasoning makes a little bit of sense to me for a non-medicated schizophrenic.
Yeah, it's illogical.
Yeah. So we've got the seven women that were killed over the 6 months in 1996. We've got the women before that who were killed, but apparently not charged to him. They were, I think they went unsolved, actually. But it's fairly, I mean, it's a not a bet, or it's not a weird jump to go from thinking that he is the killer for those, especially if the MO was very similar for all of those.
It's a very similar...
Yeah.
So he was... Was he charged for killing the 7 women in 6 months in 1996?
He was charged for... Let me find this. He was charged for the 7 women. He actually only admitted to 4, and I did find some names. He admitted to murdering Mamie Verlander.
Hold on. Burkhart charged for 7.
Yeah.
Admitted to 4.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Mamie Verlander, Lucille Boyd, Elizabeth Seibert, and Jane Foster. And apparently, while he was at, while the Sergeant Reed was asking him about the murder of Lucille Boyd, that's when Burkhart described the killing of Rachel Henshaw at Kensington Gardens. So that's how he found out about it. And I guess if the nurse identified him as well, that would make sense. He said that he went in and... Actually, no, I take it back as far as suffocating her. He just removed her oxygen mask, and he watched her suffocate. And then he left the room. He said she was suffering, so he thought she needed to die. So it sounds like he was
like
trying to be a mercy killer.
Yeah.
And, I mean, honestly, I wouldn't say strangling women with their own towels and beating them and finding them in bathtubs would be... mercy killing, or why he would think that they would need to die, but I guess if you're not on your meds and schizophrenia is uncontrolled, I can understand that the thought process is not rational most of the time. He was charged with those. He was also charged with the murders of three homeless men, and then I believe he admitted to a 4th, but he didn't actually get charged for that one. So, all in all, it sounds like he was charged for 10 murders, but he only admitted to 8, or 7. No, 8, excuse me. And then there's a whole host of other ones that happened before these 7 women that he killed, that no one ever attributed to him or charged him with.
So what's his background? Like, why is he...
I've never really seen his background. It doesn't sound like he had, like, anything special about his background. I guess, you know, sometimes with mental illness like that, you can grow up in, like, the most normal of homes and still go out and end up just... I'm just guessing the killer. And this is where it comes out that there wasn't actually any DNA evidence that tied him to the killings, and it was just his confessions. And it was the confessions of a man who was schizophrenic and not taking his medication for it. So that kind of throws a whole new light on it, whether or not he actually committed these murders. I don't know. It sounds like he confessed. The police are saying that he confessed and he knew details about the deaths that the public would not know, but, you know, that always could be just something to cover up their tracks, too. You know, they wanted so hard to pin this on somebody, and the detective, Ron Reed, who said that they covered up the death of Rachel Henshaw, he said he actually came forward because he wants to find the family of Rachel Henshaw and let them know the truth. Excuse me.
Because they had told the family that it was...
Right.
It was
natural causes.
Natural.
Yeah.
And it wasn't.
Yep. And the Richmond police issued a statement. There wasn't really anything to it other than, you know, let us know if you have any information on the case. But they... one of the reporters around here, I want to say it was... Actually, this is Rachel DePompa. She's one of our local reporters. She actually tracked down the police chief at the time of the murders. And the police chief said that Reed's story wasn't true. So he wasn't the killer of Rachel Henshaw. He wasn't saying that he wasn't the Golden Years killer.
Okay.
But he didn't kill he's saying he didn't kill Rachel Henshaw, and it wasn't a cover-up to cover up how many murders that we've had in Richmond.
Okay.
So, I mean, it doesn't sound like they really pursued any other major, suspects for this case. It was just him, and it makes me wonder if he really did do it, or if they just pinned it on him because he was an easy target. And the whole reason that I'm thinking about that is one of the victims, and this is not one of the four that we heard about, and I don't think this is one that he was charged with, but it was one that was considered to be one of his. Her name was Caroline Cook, and she was a volunteer at St. Mary's Hospital. She loved animals. She lived in a small Richmond town or Richmond neighborhood, and her neighbors apparently loved her. She was 71 years old. She was a widow, so she lived alone. And the neighborhood was a nice neighborhood, apparently. It was just a decent working neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And, I guess it sounds like she was in the right place, just at the wrong time. She was actually found in January of 1993 in her living room. This is awful. She had been sexually assaulted and bludgeoned to death.
Oh.
And,
That's awful.
Yeah. So, the police apparently did not release this information to the public because they used it to catch the killer. They didn't want this information to get out. And they believe that her killer was a man. And again, this is where we find out they pinned, and apparently they did pin four of the murders. I guess they thought he did those seven as well, but they couldn't get enough evidence for the three. And they pinned him on Burkhart. But what's interesting about this, 3 years after Caroline Cook's murder, there was a Richmond police detective, Jan McTiernan, who actually found the killer using a fingerprint on a can of spray starch found inside Mrs. Cook's home. And her house was in the Museum District, which is a really nice neighborhood.
So 3 years after she was murdered, the killer was found by using a fingerprint on a can of
Spray starch. For ironing. And it turns out that fingerprint actually belonged to an 18-year-old girl.
I read about that.
Did you read that? Okay.
That is the girl that they think, she's a psychopath.
Yeah. So apparently she was 15 when she broke into the house. I guess it sounds like it was just a robbery gone wrong. She broke in and Mrs. Cook came home and found her inside and confronted her. And this is what gets me is that one member of the homicide squad actually said it was the worst crime scene he'd ever seen in his entire career. And according to the autopsy report, her body was covered with lacerations and contusions.
Oh my gosh.
Her lips and, I'm not sure what this word, it says arrows, but I'm not sure exactly. Ears, I think it's misspelled. Were torn. Almost every rib was not only broken but shattered.
Oh my god!
This is one of the cases that I think they originally would have tried to pin on Burkhart had it not been for that one fingerprint. She is in jail now. She's apparently the judge has ordered that when the parole board looks at her for parole, they have to look at the crime scene photos before they do anything.
I read about this, and they interviewed, I thought they had interviewed the girl's family member.
They did.
The girl that murdered Caroline.
They did. Yeah,
they did. And they said that she wasn't right.
Right. They said that when she was young, she actually started seeing, psychiatrists for aggressiveness, hyperactivity, pulling out her hair, and smearing feces.
Whoa.
Which I guess...
Oh, no.
Yeah, and this is the part that makes me think that they knew something was going on. She was At an early age, she was violent to small animals. She cut off the ears of a kitten.
No, don't say that.
Yeah, I can't say
You
this.
Can just say
Let's
violent
just say
to small animals.
Crap animal stuff going on. I'm not going to read this. You can Google it if you want. It's awful. She also burned her maternal uncle's Bible and set his bed on fire.
No. This girl.
So, honestly, it sounds like they could have written the bad seed based on her. And her mother said that all of the treatment she got, she saw all the warning signs, and she thinks that there's something else the mental health system could have done. But, I mean, if she hadn't committed any crimes, short of locking her up, I mean, you can't force her, a 15-year-old girl, to spend the rest of her life in a psychiatric ward.
Well, it says
if
that...
she has no reason for it.
Okay, so 20 years
is
2013.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what ended up... Did she get out?
No.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Says she was given 55 years.
Yeah.
She's up for parole. Parole board is processing the automatic request. It's extremely unlikely she'll get out this time, you guys.
Yeah.
So.
And this was 2014, I haven't seen any other articles saying she got out.
According to a prison source and Monique's mom, this is the girl's name was Monique, she has spent most of the past two decades in seclusion in prison. She doesn't want to be around anybody.
Yeah.
But one day in 20 more years, Monique will have served her time and will get out, meaning that... So what, 2013, so 20 years plus that is 2033.
Yeah, that's going to be...
Terrible, oh my goodness.
Yeah. So, I mean, it sounds like she had just been, like, wandering into people's houses, and if she got caught, she attacked them at the same time. And I guess Mrs. Cook was just... You know, she went a little too far with
Why?
Mrs. Cook. A lot too far, actually.
You always think... So when... I know this is awful. But you always have to wonder what is going on. Like, what was going on in this girl's head?
Yeah.
That she was like, I'm going to pick this house. You know what
right.
I mean? Like,
right.
what triggered that? I would be curious.
Right.
I don't know. I actually don't know if I'd be curious. Because
no,
I don't know if I want to know. But...
The stuff that she's done in the past is, ugh. I mean, they did say that they wanted her locked up in a mental hospital instead of prison, but I guess she could have gotten treatment.
There's much of a...
And I'm not sure. I can't remember. I know in Canada this happened, but if you're put into a mental hospital, there's a possibility of release a lot sooner.
Oh, yeah.
And that's in Canada, because the one story that I'm thinking of is the guy on the bus with the...
The head?
I think he's out because he was put into a psychiatric hospital and was released. He's out under a different name. But I don't know if we're the same in the U.S. with that. Are they serving their full term?
I have no idea.
I'm going to have to look that up. So, I mean, yeah, you can put her in a mental hospital. She can get treatment. But when she's out, she has to continue that treatment. And
who's going to ensure that?
Yeah. And a lot of, I mean...
And is it better, like, honestly, like, is it better for her to just stay locked up?
Right. So, I mean, anybody who's ever taken anything for, like, depression or something, you know you get to that point where, like, you feel better and you're like, oh, I don't have to take this anymore.
I don't have to take this anymore.
Yeah, and you stop and it comes back and, you know, that's...
So whatever happened to Burkhart?
Burkhart was put in jail.
So is he still...
He died in prison.
He died in prison.
Yeah, he died a few years after he was imprisoned. So I'm not sure if I believe that he killed all of those women because of the Cook thing. Because, I mean, it sounds like they didn't get any DNA evidence from these murders. And if they didn't get any DNA evidence from those, but they did get a fingerprint from Caroline Cook's murder, then, you know, something that they had originally attributed to him... He might be out there confessing to, like, everything, including being Jesus Christ or something like that.
Yeah.
If they put it into his head and he's not medicated and they tell him that he did these murders, I can see that he would just confess to them because, mm-hmm. you know, that's where his head is. So I don't know. I do think he was responsible for the homeless men because he did describe strangling them and killing them. But the women... I'm not sure. And he even said he didn't do it. And yeah, they always say that.
What if the girl that is in prison right now did those things?
I think there's a possibility she might have been able to do like the first one, the earlier ones, but it sounds like they caught her pretty, like 3 years afterwards. So 1993 is when it happened. So yeah, they caught her in 96. So she could very well have been responsible for more of those. And I wonder how thorough they were with DNA, looking for DNA evidence, if they didn't find her DNA evidence until 3 years later.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty shoddy police work.
When did they start using DNA?
Remember, I think it was Southside Strangler case.
Right. And so that was in
89, 90, I think.
Okay. 1986.
Oh, okay. Was it really? I don't know why I keep thinking it's like 89.
1986.
Okay.
We began, it says...
Oh, okay, that's DNA.
Just a quick little Google search mm-hmm. indicates that it was first made its way into the courts in 1986.
Okay.
When police in England asked molecular biologist Alec Jeffries, who had begun investigating the use of DNA and for forensics,
mm-hmm.
to use DNA to verify the confession of a 17-year-old boy in two rape murders in the English Midlands.
Oh.
The test proved the teenager was in fact not the perpetrator, and the actual attacker was eventually caught, also using DNA testing.
Cool.
1986.
Nice. Okay, so they used it then.
And then the first DNA-based conviction in the U.S. occurred shortly after in 1987, when the circuit court in Orange County, Florida, convicted Tommy Lee Andrews of rape after DNA tests matched his DNA from a blood sample with that of semen traces found in a rape victim.
Okay. I remember us talking about that. I thought that was the Southside Strangler was the first case where did that.
That was the first execution.
Oh, okay. All right. Based that makes sense. On DNA. That's true. Evidence. I don't know why I didn't remember that.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, they had the ability to look for DNA evidence, and I mean, this is years past when it started to become popular in crime scenes, or like usable. So you think that they have the ability, if there are this many women being killed, older women being killed, why are they not pulling out every possible DNA kit they have and swabbing every inch of these women's homes?
You know, that's a really good question, and I'm just speculating, but I don't know that everyone was quite... I mean, they could have been, but also DNA relies on you getting something to compare the DNA to.
Yeah.
So even though you have a blood sample or you have something, you need to have someone to compare that to.
Right.
And if the DNA, you have to think 86, you know, the database started... in 1994.
Oh, okay.
So...
But, I mean, even if they had some DNA to compare to, they arrested Burkhart for this.
Yeah.
They could have taken his... gotten a DNA sample and done the comparison then. I mean, so was there actually DNA evidence behind the scenes that we're not privy to? Or...
There could
was
have...
Was it all based on his confessions?
It could have been, and I do know that DNA... testing takes a while, but so when did they arrest Burkhart? What was that?
1996.
Okay, so that would only be 2 years since the database started.
Right.
They probably, you know, there could have been some evidence issues with at those crime scenes. I have no doubt that they collected plenty of evidence from those crime scenes, but
actually, it does say, I mean, I just looked and there actually was not any DNA evidence that tied him to the killings.
Okay.
The cases were built around his confessions and what he knew about the deaths.
Which, as we know, can be a little challenging, especially when you're dealing with someone that has a mental illness, because you're not really sure if what they're saying is truthful.
Yeah.
And you can get caught up in false confession territory mm-hmm. a lot with that.
Exactly.
But, I mean, it's not to say he didn't.
Right.
And I think the police do all they can to try and...
Yeah, I'm not saying the police are bad at all.
No, I know you're not.
At
but
all.
I'm just
no.
saying to our listeners, like, just because there was a confession and no DNA doesn't mean that nobody... that someone didn't actually do it.
Right.
Or that this person is not being truthful.
Yeah.
I think we get, in our society, we get really caught up in, well, there has to be DNA evidence. Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes that's not even available.
That's true, yeah.
And it wasn't available for many, many years, as we know.
I think I'm looking at this from a 2017 perspective.
Yes, it's like,
it's
come
really,
on, guys.
And, I mean, also back in the early 90s, the police were dealing with so many murders, so I don't fault them for this at all. I think, and honestly, I think the Birchmount police are fantastic to begin with.
Oh, yeah.
They deal with a lot of stuff, and they're really good about it. But, I mean, I don't know. It just, I think that there were so many murders going on that to get this confession and have some of them solved and kind of put the city at ease a little bit, because that's one more murder off the streets.
Mm-hmm.
I think that may have been part of their motivation for that, too. So,
yeah,
you know, we were all kind of on edge back then.
Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't allowed to go. I did go into the city when I was in high school, but I wasn't really allowed to go after dark.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't supposed to. We did. So, I mean, it was not a nice place in most places. Now, I'm fine. I will drive through any part of Richmond right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I am not, nothing bothers me. I love our city, and there's so many cool places around here, and even the places that are considered less safe, I've never had any problems. Everyone's just doing what they do, and no one's bothering anybody else.
Yeah, I would say it's a completely different environment now.
Yeah, so we're not like walking on eggshells right now about crime like we were back then.
Yeah.
And I guess it's a lot easier now too with DNA evidence. So I don't think something like this would happen again without that sort of evidence to back it up.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, there's a lot of twists and turns to this case, and like you heard, it's very confusing at times. There's not a ton of information on it, but there's enough to kind of piece it together. And I kind of wish I remembered this, because, you know, I remembered so much about Southside Strangler.
Well, this seems like it was a lot more complicated.
Yeah.
And probably you said that there was not as much coverage on it.
Yeah,
because
not that I remember.
They probably were dealing, you know, they had the Southside Strangler. They
yeah.
had, and now this, and the murder rate was high back then.
Yeah.
So they
and
were dealing with a lot more, and they wanted to keep things, they wanted to, and two, they didn't want to jeopardize any investigation. I'm just speculating, but.
Right. And, I mean, we didn't have, like, we had our places closing down, like, our rock department stores were closing because of the crime and all of that, so,
Yeah,
I mean.
The city is just now, I mean, starting to come back and get to be a little safer.
Yeah, it's a lot. I think it's a lot safer.
It is a lot safer.
Yeah, I mean,
I
don't have a problem walking in, like, a crowd downtown. And I did it last night. I was delivering food for Uber.
Yeah.
So I had to, like, walk downtown, and I didn't feel nervous at all about it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Wow.
I mean, yeah, I think, I know we sound like we're doing an infomercial for
Come to
now.
Richmond. Yeah.
But it really is a good city.
It is.
So, anyway, that's my case. I know there's not quite as much information as yours, but...
No, I thought it was fascinating. I think there's a lot of moving parts to both of our cases.
Yeah.
And just great for opening up dialogue with other people about some speculation as to what really may have happened.
So. Right. And I think both of them were fascinating.
Definitely.
So.
Okay.
Well, cool. So I guess find us on Twitter. Tweet us about the Wallace Thrasher
case. Wallace Thrasher, we would like
Let
to
us know what
your,
you think.
Yes, what do you think? Do you think he's still alive? Do you think
yeah.
that he's gone?
So we're at Twitter at CrimeQuestPod, Instagram, same thing.
Yeah, we're a little more active on Twitter, I'll admit.
Yeah, and I keep tweeting stuff that I keep thinking it's my personal account I'm tweeting. So if you see stuff about, like, Once Upon a Time or, you know, TV shows, I apologize. So
no worries.
Yeah.
We're human beings. We have interests other
yeah.
than us.
So yeah, crimequestpod@gmail.com. Email us with ideas, show ideas.
Or just tweet it to us. Honestly,
yeah.
that's probably the best way to get in touch with us.
The email.
And we're not great about the Facebook group, even though we love Facebook and we're on there.
If it's more active, I think it'll be easier to
Get
in there and be more active. We'll try to post some stuff to get everybody interested, too. But if you just search for Crime Quest Podcast on Facebook, it's right there. Just join and we'll let everybody in that wants to come in.
All right.
Yeah, cool.
So thanks, everybody, for listening.
Thank you for listening to Crime Quest. It is our goal to make this as informative as possible. If you heard something amazing and want to give us a review, please do so on iTunes along with a rating. If you have suggestions for show topics, please send them to crimequestpod@gmail.com. Also, follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Crime Quest Pod. Thanks. Crime Quest would like to give special thanks to Hemi Haynes for putting together our music for this episode. Thanks, Hemi!